Thank you for joining us and welcome to another edition of Answers Network. I'm your host, Alan Cardoza, and if you're just learning about this show, please know that it is on the air for you by bringing on special guests that can inspire, educate, and in some cases, entertain. And our goal for each show is to bring answers and options to making your lives happier, healthier, and more successful. And remember, if you can't listen live, go to our website at answers.network and browse through a variety of heartfelt and enlightening topics. I'm confident that there is something you will find to bring greater joy to your life and that of your loved ones. Now, I also ask a favor of you. Please forward at least one of our shows to your social media group and to someone you know who can benefit from a particular subject. This is one powerful way we can make a positive difference in the world together. Now, our topic today is going to touch a lot on communication, and it's going to touch on teenagers. So let's start with, you have a teenager. Of course, you want to be the best for them, but sometimes you just don't know what to do, right? Well, there are many questions you have to answer, and you feel you're constantly fighting against social and technological influences. It can feel pretty overwhelming as a parent. However, it is possible to be the parent you want to be, and it's possible to raise happy, well-adjusted children who will go out into the world and make a positive difference. Enter our guest's new book, How to Be the Parent Your Teenager Needs to Be, and needs you to be. Now, without all the fighting, frustration, or fear of doing it wrong. In this book, our guest provides practical advice that you can start implementing today that will help you shift your own mindset first before working to shift the mindset of your teenager. Now, think about that. Such a simple thing, but yet it's huge in the communication process with almost anybody. Shift your own mindset first before working to shift the mindset of your teenager. And joining us to talk about this and more is Dr. Jim White, who is an author, coach, and founder of the Family Enrichment Academy. He has spent the last 40 years studying the topics of personal development, marriage, and parenting. And he shares that more importantly, he has also spent those 40 years applying these lessons and living life as a husband, a father to 6 children, and a grandfather to 12. Jim, welcome to Answers Network.
Well, glad to be here. It's a pleasure. Looking forward to it.
Well, it is my pleasure. And this show used to be called Answers for the Family. And we had so much focus on just exactly what your book touches on, which is the communication and the relationship between parent and child, and most of the time, parent and teen. So I really appreciate the fact that you have written a book on this that really touches directly on those things that I think are most important and probably more important now than ever. So again, thank you for that.
Absolutely. Like I say, thrilled to be here and looking forward to hopefully sharing some insights that'll make a difference in some folks' lives.
So, and before we go into some questions in regards to the book, share a little bit about yourself and what brought you to the point of thinking, I have something here that I need to share with many more people?
Well, yeah. So, and you mentioned in the intro, I've been married for 40 years and we have 6 children. And as you mentioned also, I've always been a student of personal development, parenting, and family enrichment, and just, you know, all those kinds of topics. And actually, I like to refer to myself, I'm kind of a classic example of a hero's 2 journeys. Now, I don't know if for some of your audience, they may not be familiar with that idea, but it's a storytelling technique that's used a lot in books and movies. And the premise is that the main character, the hero within the story, is on 2 different journeys. First, they are trying to accomplish some kind of a goal or a task. And this is mm-hmm. known as the outside journey or the journey of accomplishment. And that can be interesting and entertaining, but it's the second journey that makes the hero compelling. And that is that they're going through an internal transformation. They're becoming a better person, mm-hmm. discovering principles, values, and beliefs that just make their life work better. And if you think about it, that's what brings the tear to the eye when you're watching the movie or book. So how this connects to me is when I think back over my life as a parent, I see those two journeys playing out for me. I mean, as you can imagine, having six children, we had a lot mm-hmm. of tasks to accomplish, right? There was a lot of outside goals. There were places to be, homework to help with, you know, it was always something to do. And we had our share of obstacles as well along the way, just like any family would. But interestingly, as I was going through that, through my interest in personal development, marriage, parenting, I was also experiencing this internal transformation. You know, I was discovering, you know, the principles, values, and beliefs that just made our family work better. And so it was this internal transformation that really was sort of the miracle of the life, if you will. That's where the miracles happen. And so where I find myself now is our children are grown and gone. I say that our youngest is in college now. And I just feel this calling to share some of the wisdom gained over those 40 years. And so I formed the Family Enrichment Academy to help fulfill that calling. And the book is a piece of that. You know, the book is How to Be the Parent Your Teenager Needs You to Be. I do focus a lot with families with teens or preteens, but I do coaching, one-on-one coaching and workshops and just a variety of different ways to deliver content to help support parents. And I like to lean back on that hero's journey with the parents as well, because I encourage them to think of themselves as like the hero within their family. And they're on a journey, you know, they're moving through their mm-hmm. life as a parent. And part of my role is to help support them as they move along that journey. So that's kind of a 40-year summary of how I got to this point.
Well, I love your analogy of the hero's journey. And it actually, knowing a little bit about the way that scripts are put together, you're right on target, because I've been involved in some of those to where they say you need more arc. You don't have enough arc, you know, with this character. And that's exactly what you're describing, is that having more arc in you as the character. One of the things that I really liked as I was going through the book was you talk about the power of self-reflection. And I think too many times parents go into a situation and they're so focused on the teen and whatever it is that's just happened that they're not happy with, that they're not really looking inward first. So share a little bit about what you mean when you speak about the power of self-reflection and how it can bring better clarity into the view for parents and the teens as well.
Yeah. So a lot of times, and you sort of described it, when something happens, a circumstance pops up, the teen does something. Let's say they bring home a bad grade on a test, for example. Mm-hmm. A lot of times as a parent, we just sort of respond. I'll call it, it's almost like a reflex. You know, we just sort of respond without really putting much thought or intentionality into how we're going to respond. And so part mm-hmm. of that first fundamental that I like to work with parents is the idea of being more aware. First of all, the first step is to be aware of where you are, and then create a little bit of a pause so then you can be intentional about choosing how you want to respond in a given situation. And the other thing in the book, I share this idea that all of us, I mean, every one of us, have these two competing mindsets that reside within us. And one of those is fear-based, and one of them is love-based. And in any given moment or situation, you're going to be responding out of one of those two mindsets. Mm-hmm. And what happens is, unfortunately, a lot of times that fear-based mindset becomes sort of the default. That's the one we tend to respond from first. And I like to encourage parents to think about anytime you respond from a fearful mindset, the result is going to be destructive. It's going to destroy or disrupt the relationship, and it's going to be the source of pain and suffering. And if you can shift into more of a love-based mindset, it has healing attributes. It's going to tend to heal or build that connection or relationship. And it's the source of peace and joy. And so it's a matter of being intentional about where am I coming from? And that starts by being aware, which is what that reflective, you know, the idea of being reflective is to increase your awareness of where am I, where am I really coming from? And it's, we don't always stop and do that. And so it's a great exercise to do is that, you know, try to stop and create a little bit of a pause.
Yeah. And I think what you're saying is that we need to be less reactionary. And as it turns out, we have a question that's come in from a listener that talks about some of their issues about being reactionary. This one reads, my daughter has two teens and both she and her husband are so reactionary when events occur. When I recommend that they calm down before they scream and yell at them, they tell me to butt out. I'm buying your book for them, but would be so grateful if you could give me some advice on how to present it to them in a way that will be accepting, not offending. And again, tell me, and so they won't tell me I'm interfering. Thanks so much. And this is from Lauren in California.
So there's two pieces to that. First of all, I would say that it's critical that you adopt a growth mindset as a parent. In other words, you're willing to be open and to grow and learn. And my initial thought is when she's describing the two parents, her son, or was it a son and a daughter-in-law or a daughter and a son-in-law, whichever way it was, but they don't sound very open to growth at this point. But that's critical. And as all the parents out there, I always say that's one of the first priorities is for you to adopt that growth mindset. And so that you're willing to step into and learn new things. And that's where that's the source of hope when you think about it. If we're not willing to grow and learn and change, then there's no hope of things being different in the future than they are today. And so that growth mindset is so powerful. Then the second thing I would throw out to her is the first step, and we talked a little bit about this before we came on, is to for her to work to build her connection with the two parents that she's talking with. Because I like to share in the book, I mentioned that you can't hope to influence or empower your teenager until you first build a really strong connection. And that's a truism no matter who you're talking to. She can't hope to influence or empower them to act differently unless that connection is really strong. And so I would recommend that she start there, you know, before she starts introducing these ideas, really work to develop and build that connection with her son, with the two parents, because that's going to put her in a position then to influence, you know, to influence them down the road. So hopefully that gives her some thoughts.
Yeah, I think the second part, I was trying to think of how to answer it as well. And I don't know that I have an answer for a nice way to present a book that you think somebody's going to not be happy about because they're going to think you're judging them.
And I would throw out, this is a great opportunity for the listener that's asked the question, for her to be a little self-reflective too. Where is she coming from as she engages with them? Is she really engaging? For example, in this scenario, I would encourage her to be forgiving. You know, think when you think from a love-based mindset, you know, she needs to be forgiving and approach it with a forgiveness in her heart and also compassion. That's a big one in a scenario like this, because you got to have some compassion for what they're struggling with and what they're going through. And then that puts you in a better place. And, you know, again, building connection is just critical. And sometimes you do, you know, in a scenario like this, and it's the same with a teenager, it's a matter of asking, you might just ask, how can I help? I just want to support you and help you. How can I help? Without telling them. And they may say, okay, we're fine. You know, it's no worry at this point. And if they say that at that point, you know, you back away for a minute but then you continue to build connection. In this case, maybe she finds a way to, engage with them. Maybe they do. Here's an idea for them. A shared experience can be a great way to do that. And so let's say was it a son or a daughter that was, I don't remember. I should. I didn't hear.
Yeah, it was her daughter and
her husband or whatever. Yeah. Right. So maybe, you know, with her daughter, they decide let's take a cooking class together. that's a shared experience, right? Something they could do, creates a little bond, helps them, you know, puts them in an environment where they can build some connection. And as she goes through, and as you do that, that then after that, then you're in a better position maybe to influence or to offer someone, you know, be more of a source of empowerment. So you just got to look for opportunities to build connection as well. And if they're not ready to listen, that the signal is, oh, I need to deepen connection. You know, that's what the thought should be at that point.
Yeah. What I hear you saying is, you know, and you're not saying this part of it, but I'm thinking that if you get the book yourself to the person that sent in the question and start reading it and start modeling some of the things and see if they'll pick up on it rather than, and if they ask a question like, you know, when you were raising me, you didn't know about this, this, and this. How did you figure this out? And go, well, I found it in this book.
Right.
Did you like it?
Yeah, exactly. And so you're right. You can model it. And in the skill sets, the fundamental skills around building connection and empowerment, for example, and being self-aware and being really intentional about your mindset and where you're coming from, that really those are universal in all relationships. It could be the husband and the wife, or again, a son or a daughter, or it could be a brother or sister, or maybe even parents. I know sometimes people will say, you know, my relationship with my parents is not that great. And that's part of why they feel like they're struggling as a parent. Mm-hmm. And so part of the healing process is to heal that relationship as well. And it's the same kinds of skill sets, you know, the same principles and foundational elements that are going to allow you to heal those relationships also.
That makes perfect sense. We have another question or comment that has come in. And again, I want to take this time to thank those that take the time to send in questions. I realize that, you know, this is in the middle of the day for many people. So we get lots of questions that'll come in, oftentimes from teachers. I think this next one is as well. And they say, you know what, can you please ask this question of your guest? I can't listen live, but I want to be able to listen at a later time and still get the answer. So I really appreciate the people that take the time to do that. This one reads, this is such a needed book right now when parents and teens are living in such heightened states of anxiety. I'm a high school counselor, and what I'm seeing is alarming. I feel this book may be a good one for our teachers to read, as they comment frequently about students they feel are acting out because of dysfunctional family dynamics. And of course, the counseling staff is also searching for resources for parents who come in frustrated and searching for help with their teens. Is your book mainly for parents, or could we in the educational trenches benefit from it as well? And this is from Oriana in Utah.
Yeah, I would, and again, it kind of goes back to what we were just saying. I think the fundamental principles are applicable in all relationships. So that teacher-student relationship is going to be the same. And so, again, you know, the first step is for the teacher to be mindful of their own mindset. Where are they coming from? How are they engaging with the children? Is it more from a fearful mindset or a love-based mindset? And actually, in the book, I talk about, and here would be a distinction that in a teaching environment might pop up. There's this struggle between control and empowerment. A lot of times parents want to control what their children do and what their teenagers do, versus the alternative is to empower them to make responsible decisions on their own. And I can see how a teacher-student relationship could start to fall into that same kind of difficulty, where that teacher may be trying to over control the scenario, which is more of a fearful mindset. So anyway, the first step, which I think that skill can be very helpful for a teacher. And then it's about building connection. And in the book, I outline like 9 different strategies for different ways to build connection and ideas. But again, you have to be very intentional about how are you building connection. Now, again, a parent-child relationship's different in that dynamic than a teacher-student, but they're still the same kinds of principles. Like one of them I talk about is being curious. You know, curiosity and asking curiosity-based questions is a great way to build connection with someone else. And so that that teacher could do the same thing. You know, like, for example, a teacher after a test might ask the class, well, I'm curious, what do you guys think? Was this a fair test? You know, that's asking, it's engaging with them and allowing them to express some of their thoughts, some of their opinions, and it builds connection, it builds trust with that class then. And it's this, I would encourage a parent to ask a similar question. You know, it's not what grade did you get? It's, was it a fair test? Or what was the best question on the test? You know, you start engaging from that perspective, and that's to build connection. And so, you know, there's value there. And then the third fundamental I have in the book is about empowerment. You know, the whole idea of trying to empower them to be the best they can be. And that starts by not, from a parenting perspective, by not solving the problem for them or always trying to fix it for them. You have to turn the problem back over to them and then support mm-hmm. them. We talked about an example of a teen that gets a bad grade on a test. Okay, it's not the parent's job to design a new study plan. The parent's job is to say, oh, that's kind of a bummer for you. Again, then you turn it back to them and say, what do you think you should do different next time in order to do a better job? Or what other resources could you reach out to? You just start asking those questions and let the team process the information. Let them come up with a solution. And that's more of an empowerment mindset. Right. So I think the teacher could do the same thing.
Right. And I want everybody to understand something that I was recognizing while you were saying this. Do you notice that none of those questions were yes or no questions? It's one of the simplest things, but it makes such a huge difference. So instead of saying, did you have a nice day at school, of which they can say yes or no, you say, what was the most interesting thing that happened today at school? So they can't just throw out that yes or no question or that yes or no answer. And that was one of the things I was smiling as you were saying this, because I'm going, you see, none of these are yes or no.
Right. And I sometimes I'll use the reference of a results oriented question is typically a yes mm-hmm. or no, or, you know, what grade did you get? An A. You know, it's just a single, as opposed to a process oriented question, ask them to process something and to think a little bit. And that's the open-ended question, the who, you know, the what, when, how kind of questions that you're talking about. It create a little opportunity for the teen to process. And the other thing I'd throw out is don't demand an answer when you ask one of those open-ended questions, like right now, because they may not know an answer right now. Mm-hmm. And they might come back an hour later or 2 days later and say, you know what, I've been thinking about what you asked me, and here, you know, they finally have an answer, right, which is perfect, because you want them to process that and to think through it. And if I might go back, that question was started with around anxiety, which is, it's becoming a huge issue with our teens and within the schools. And, you know, it's one of the key factors I like to reference it as like a line of defense that a parent can put up to help protect their child from anxiety is that connection that they have. You know, if the teen feels connected and they feel like there's a safe place they can go, which home becomes that safe place, or that parental relationship becomes that safe place, it may not eliminate all anxiety, but it just creates a line of defense, and it helps to minimize it, if you will. And that's why that connection is just so critical. To help that, put that teen in a position to get through that.
Yeah. And I want to share something for many people that have listened to this show. They know that I'm an international detective, and that one of the areas I work in is dealing with children that have been trafficked. And when I speak on that subject, one of the things that I talk about is that if you don't make your home that safe place where they can come and they can talk to you, there is somebody else out there trying to make themselves that supposed safe place with your child. So it's that important, and especially in this day and age.
Absolutely. And I would add to that, and I talk about this in the book as well, is your home then becomes a North Star. It becomes a reference point for your teenager to evaluate relationships against when they're out in the world. I mean, if you're home, and in the book, I have my definition of a successful family, but the last line of it is, it's a home full of peace, joy, warmth, and love. So if your home is full of that, and that's what your teen is used to experiencing, when they go out into the world and they engage with someone, and it's not full of love, peace, and joy, they're going to recognize the difference. And they're going to get away from that because it doesn't feel comfortable. They're going to have that point of reference to compare that to. And that's hugely valuable for them as they go through and test new friendships as well.
You know, one of the things that feedback that I get from people that listen to or watch this show is they love the success stories. If I get more comments about success stories than anything else. So can you give us a success story, either your own or someone who has read your book and shared it with you, where the parent has gotten their teen to buy into the family's vision? And talk about what role that teen was able to play in this vision, in essence, empowering the teen instead of trying to control them.
Yeah, one that comes to mind actually was from our family, and it's actually a scenario that I describe in the book as well. And this has a teacher reference to it, so it may get back to that other question. Sure. So the scenario is, one of our daughters comes home one day from, she's in high school, and makes the comment that this particular teacher she has for a particular class is the worst teacher ever, right? Worst teacher. And I guarantee you're not going to make it through the high school years with your teenager without them having at least one of these quote unquote worst teachers ever, right? It's just the teacher doesn't know anything. They're terrible. They can't expect us to learn. It's just all of those bad sort of characteristics. So that's the scenario. And if you think about it, if we were to respond from a fearful mindset, we might go in and try to control that. I've seen scenarios where parents will call the school and, demand that the teacher be reprimanded and that they be let go. And, they sort of overtake that whole situation, right? And try to control it. Our approach, and I feel like it worked out pretty well, we tried to be more love-centered. It's like, there's two aspects to this. First of all, it's to introduce the idea of being love-based to the teenager, which we did to our daughter at that time. We, the comment was, teachers, when they get into teaching, they do it because they're inspired to help children, right? Right. There's that's underneath it. And one of the sort of principles of a love-based mindset is people are fundamentally good. And so this teacher, if they're struggling and if it seems like they're not doing it, it's something maybe going on for them. I mean, we don't know. I mean, maybe they're going through a divorce. Maybe their parents just passed away. You don't know what's going on inside of that person's life. So we should have some compassion for them, right? We should be forgiving to them. And so we introduce that as a way of approaching this and way of thinking it. And then take it one step further for your teenager, which can be hugely powerful. It's, what could you do to maybe make their day a little better? Nice. You're inviting them to go out and make a difference, right? And if that teenager feels empowered to go make a difference, just think what that does to their own self-image. I can make a difference in this adult's life, perhaps. Mm-hmm. And so you introduce that, and it's not us telling her what to do. It's just, maybe you ought to think about what could you do? It's that open-ended question. And to be quite honest, I'm not sure what she did, but that seed was planted. And it could have been as simple as a smile and a good morning the next day when she walked into class. But the idea is that you set that up. That's part of our family's approach and our family's vision, if you will, is to be more love-centered. And then
I think it's, go ahead. I'm just going to say, I think that's beautiful because it really is sort of a mindset. And I love the fact of touching on, we don't know what's going on with the other person at this particular time. And that can be a teacher, that can be a coworker, it can be anyone. So to step back a little bit and to be able to teach our kids that at an early age, I think is incredibly beneficial.
And it's the underlying premise is people are fundamentally good.
Yeah.
And the interesting message there, and this is one of those hidden things that's underneath this. If you approach things that people are fundamentally bad, and if that's the way you think, guess what that means about me? Because I'm a people, right? If I'm a person, then I must be fundamentally bad too, right? And so you're sending that message right back to yourself when you think of it that way. And so part of the message is people are fundamentally good. And if they're struggling, it's not that we should pass judgment on them and attack them. We should find a way to help and serve them maybe. And so it's just, that's the love-based mindset versus a fear-based mindset. So you know, yeah, it's an underlying message there.
And it is so good. And actually, I have two thoughts that come up. One of them is a little more humorous, but one of my sons, when he was in grade school, came home and said something very similar as to what your daughter said. And it's like, oh, yeah. I got the most terrible teacher, you know, and I was a room dad at that school. So I knew exactly who he was talking about. So I said, really, I said, you know, what is it about them that, you know, that's making you feel this way?
Right.
And he said, this is her 32nd year at teaching. He said, she's 2 years past when she should have retired.
Which may have been true.
It may have been true. But if the hardest part for me was not to break out laughing, because this is coming from a 10-year-old. And what I want to say to him is like, wow, that's really perceptive.
Right. Well, and it's one thing I would point out there. You'd be surprised how insightful your children can be when you ask the open-ended question. You ask an open-ended question. You said, what is it about this person that makes it not good? And allowed them to respond in a way that was insightful. And I can't tell how many times parents are floored by how insightful their children can be. So that's a great example.
The other thought that I had was, many years ago, I raced professionally. I raced motorcycles, and so I made many trips to Mexico as part of these race teams. And I'd come home, and I had friends that would say, "I can't believe that you go down there. It's horrible. It's unsafe. Every time," this is them speaking, "every time I go down there, something bad happens. I get put in jail. Somebody steals something." And what I realized was the common thread was them.
Right.
You know, so when you were talking about the fact of the way in which you're looking at things, stop for a moment and say, what's the common denominator here? You know, because I'm thinking every time I go, I have a great time.
Right.
And they say every time they go, they have a terrible time.
Right.
Okay. You know, and I've said that to people before. Well, I don't know. What's the common denominator?
Yeah. And it points to, I mentioned fear-based mindset versus love-based. That's a lot of times I'll use the word perspective, like a fear-based perspective versus a love-based perspective, because that gives, that infers that idea of what you see. And it's so true. You see things differently when you're coming from those different mindsets. And you're going to, and consequently, what happens is you respond differently. And if you respond differently, you produce different results. And so they're all interlinked, but it all starts with how are you viewing the circumstance? Actually, I got an interesting story that's kind of related to that. One of the authors that I loved reading was Wayne Dyer. I don't know if you know Wayne Dyer. Oh,
absolutely.
Right.
I'm going to date myself, but I had all of his cassette tapes.
There you go. I know what a cassette tape is too. So there you go. But one of the, I can't remember which, one of the books, whatever, there was a story that kind of points to this. The premise was, you know, he's in Florida, he's on the beach, walking the beach. Somebody walks up, recognizes him and says, "Oh, you know, I'm curious, you live down here?" He says, "Yes." And the person asks, "Well, how is it down here? How are the people down here?" And his response was, "Well, how are the people where you used to live?" And then one person says, "Well, the people were awful where I used to live in New York City. They were mean, they were obnoxious, they were, you know, all out for themselves." And so his response was, "Well, that's pretty much what you're going to find down here then," right?
Exactly.
And then the next day he's on the beach, another person walks up, recognizes him, says, "Hey, I just moved here. I hear you live down here. What are the people like here?" And he says, "Well, what were the people like where you came from?" "Oh, they were great. I love my neighbors. Everybody helped each other. They took care of, we felt like one big community." And then his response was, "Well, that's pretty much what you're going to find down here," right? And it's the whole idea of what it is that you look for. That's what you're going to find.
Absolutely. We're speaking with Dr. Jim White. We're talking about his book, How to Be the Parent Your Teenager Needs You to Be, without all the fighting, frustration, or fear of doing it wrong. We're going to take a break right now, but stay with us. You're listening to or watching Answers Network.
Founded over 30 years ago to meet the needs of families in crisis, Westshield has continually focused on resolving issues that negatively impact families and businesses. Our signature therapeutic transportation service helps to ensure that adolescents in crisis are safely transported to specialized schools, programs, and treatment centers with unsurpassed experience and success. We are supported by our full-service licensed investigation agency that has legally, professionally, and compassionately located hundreds of runaways and teens. We are experienced and qualified to help, offering solutions which may include referrals to our international network of top professionals in the fields of educational consulting, psychology, psychiatry, and investigations. Simply put, West Shield Adolescent Services and West Shield Investigations are the best solutions when your family is facing a personal crisis. Call 1-800-899-8585, 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. That's 1-800-899-8585, or visit our website at westshield.com. Thank you.
And we're back. We're talking with Dr. Jim White, and we're talking about parenting. So Jim, earlier you mentioned about the nine methods, and I think you mentioned a couple of them, but I know as you discuss in your book, how parents can employ these. So share a little bit about some of these methods and some of the best ways they can employ them to build the best possible connection with their teenager.
Yeah, there's a couple of my favorites. I shared one already, the idea of being curious. You know, yes. I think that's a great way if you can ask curiosity-based questions with the point of trying to engage the teen in a way that allows them to express some of their own opinions and views. Now, the caveat here is that when they share those opinions and views, you can't pass judgment and, you know, push them back at them, right? You got to let them have that. And I would offer up, you can say, you know, that's an interesting perspective. I never thought of it that way. You know, that becomes your response. But the parent has to be able to exercise some self-control, if you will, and not jump all over them when they share an idea or a thought or an opinion. But you continue to ask curiosity, you know, where did that idea come from? Where did you hear about that? You just continue to be curious and allow them to express. So the curiosity, though, is a great way to build connection. Another one that I think a lot of times parents struggle with is just the idea of being present. And what I mean by that is to actively listen and be, you know, have your attention on your teenager. I mean, we all get caught up, you know, they're talking and you hear your phone buzz and you look and you've got work that you're working on and you're trying to type an email while they're talking to you. Those are examples of you not really being present. And the teen picks up on that. And the underlying signal is what I have to say is not important, right? When you do that. Yep. And so again, this is a place where we just have to be very intentional. When you recognize how important this connection is, you be very intentional about being present when they walk up. Because, you know, one of the most common complaints I hear from parents is my teen won't talk to me. And then you find out that the teen walked up to him and said something and tried to engage. And then the parent didn't. And when that happens, you drop everything and you focus. Because that's an opportunity to build connection. And as that connection grows, they're going to talk to you more and more and more. So, you know, being present can be huge. The other one that I think is really important is like listen with compassion. And you can see, you know, in my book is how to be the parent your teenager needs you to be. That the word be is important. I'm talking about the way your presence and how you're being with them, and to listen from a compassionate place, be compassionate when you listen to them can be a great way to build connection as well. You know, and again, it doesn't mean that you have to agree. You know, sometimes parents will say, well, what if there's a rule that they're going to break, or they, you know, they have something they have to do. And I'm not saying you're letting them get away with breaking the rule or not doing it, but at the same time, you can still have compassion for the fact that it upsets them, right? Mm-hmm. So, you know, you can't do this today, but I can understand why it's upsetting to you. You have some compassion for them. Excuse me. So that goes a long way towards having that teen feel like they are at least valued and that their opinion matters. I mean, you're validating their emotion or the experience that they're going through when you can do that. So, those are a couple of examples of the kinds of strategies that you can start to work in.
Yeah, and I'm glad you brought up the thing about the cell phone, because I've had parents that have, that have talked about, the fact that, well, you know what, I can't get my child's attention. They're constantly on that cell phone. You know, their face is constantly in it. And, and as I'm talking to that parent goes, hang on for a minute.
Right.
I got to see who this is, right. And they put the cell phone up in front. And I'm like, have you thought about where your child might have learned that?
Right. You model the behavior. And exactly. A lot of what our teens pick up is through the behavior that we model. And so unfortunately, that's a little bit, we talked about reflection in the very beginning of this. Mm-hmm. That's part of that self-reflection. What is the message that you're really communicating? I'll give you another example. Sure. You go with your family to a neighbor's house for a cookout on the 4th of July. You have 3 beers and it's time to go home. Do you get in the car and drive? Because if you do, what is the message you're sending to your 15-year-old son at that point? Yeah. Right. And so you got to, it's sometimes that's a little bit confronting, if you will, to people. Hey, well, wait a minute, I can, but again, you got to think about your expectation for them and what is it you're modeling for them. And so when that teenage son or daughter drinks and drives when they're 17, you shouldn't be surprised. Right. And so it's a opportunity for personal growth for everybody. And that's why I talk about it's a journey. And, it's growth for everybody as you go through this.
Yeah, it's a great example. And we have set up family contracts for families. And those are the types of things that are put in there, is that, and we had one to where the young man was coming back from a drug and alcohol rehab program to come back to live with the family. And one of the things that was put in there was that, if there is a relapse, he has to go back. Well, the dad had a relapse. And so I showed up and told him that I'm about to take him out to, at that time, the Betty Ford Clinic. And he looked like he was going to punch me in the face.
Right.
He says, how? And I said, well, we put it in the contract, didn't we? And I said, so I go, you realize that if you don't go, and we'll say his son was Johnny, how do you think that's going to work if Johnny relapses?
Exactly.
And the very disgruntled dad got in the car with me and yelled at me for about the first 30 minutes on the way out to the program, but he did go. I'm so glad you brought up that in regards to modeling things like drug and alcohol use. We had a young man that we picked up to take to a program, and he said, the only reason that my parents are sending me away wasn't that I was doing drugs. It was that I stole their drugs.
Interesting.
Wow.
Yeah. And that's a tough environment, obviously. But, and again, I would point to, that's why I like to say there's growth opportunities for everybody. And it's not that this is a bad thing. It's just, if you're willing to be open to the growth, having a growth mindset, think it's amazing how you can transform a family in a situation and bring more, again, it's all back to that peace, joy, and happiness and purpose into people's lives. It's just huge. And why not pursue that as the goal?
Well, let me, as someone who, I see myself as a protector or a fixer. And one of the areas that I know that I struggled with the most was allowing my teens to make mistakes. And, or at almost any age, but especially when I felt that I knew what was coming, because I had been there myself. What is your advice for parents on this topic? Because I think it's something that a lot of us struggle with, because there's that thing of, but I'm a parent, I'm supposed to rescue them from this. What's your thoughts on that?
Yeah. Well, first of all, I would encourage parents to give themselves a little bit of grace or forgiveness, because, we all go through it, and you're never perfect. Right. I mean, you're going to have a time where you respond in a way that's not helpful, that damages the relationship, but you can always go back and fix it. That's the other piece of it. So I would just, encourage parents to think from that perspective. There's always an opportunity to grow and move forward. But to that point, the teen needs to be able to make a mistake and learn from that mistake. And what I would throw out as a perspective shift is to have the parent think in terms of experiential learning. There's this idea or this concept of experiential learning. And the premise is that you learn through your own personal experience. And that's how you really get a lesson. The simple example is learning to ride a bike, right? If I put you in a classroom and give you a book, I can teach you all about balance. I can, tell you how to move the pedals and turn the steering wheel, and you could pass a test on it, right? Tell me all about it, right. But you don't know how to ride a bike yet, right?
Exactly.
The only way you know is to get on it and start pedaling. And when you do that, you're going to fall down a few times along the way. And for a parent, it's hard to watch your child go through that. So the first thing I would throw out is to always adopt that mindset. Oh, this could be a great experience. And if they learn through this experience, it's going to be so much more ingrained in them. They're going to get it at a much deeper level if they go through it themselves. And then the second thing, which I think is equally critical, is I want parents to think about the idea of helping their child develop resiliency.
Yep.
And in order to develop resiliency, they got to go through the struggle. I mean, that's the whole point of it, right? And the beauty is if they go through the struggle and they make it and they solve their own problem, it's not just that they solve that problem. They now believe, they have a belief that I can solve problems, right? I can get through this. I can make my way through whatever comes down my way. And that's so valuable when they move into adulthood too. So the other thing that if you run in and fix, or you try to jump in and rescue them, you're robbing them of the opportunity to develop that resiliency and develop that personal confidence in themselves to be able to solve their own problems. But sometimes they may get into a spot that they need your help. And so it's a fine line, and I'm not saying that you don't ever step in, but I would encourage parents to be really self-aware and aware of, am I maybe robbing some of that opportunity for the child to both have the experiential learning process as well as to develop their own problem-solving skills and resiliency.
Mm-hmm. We have another question that has come in, and this one reads, I just read Alan's email that summarizes your book, and as an eighth grade teacher, I was wondering how beneficial your book would be to have my students read it. I believe the communication divide between parents and teens is a two-way street. Is the book written in a manner that the teen can take the lead in this? It says, thanks from Jonathan in Minneapolis, Minnesota.
That's a great question. And I would say, I think there could be some value because I would go back to the three fundamental skills again, are the person managing their own mindset and trying to be more love-based and being intentional about being love-based. Secondly, is about how do I build connection and putting some importance and again, some intentionality around building connection. And then how do I empower somebody? How do I support somebody? And for eighth graders to learn to be able to do that with their friends, their brothers and sisters. I mean, I think there would be value in having that skill or having at least that idea in their head that it can make a difference. And, so I think there could be some value. It's just relationship skills at that point. And, if they were able to stretch up to their parents a little bit, that would be good too. But I think just family dynamic and friendships could really be benefited by those three fundamental skills.
Yeah. And the teacher, which again, I thank you for the question. It may be an interesting topic to go over with your students. You could approach it from the standpoint of, so how would you like a book that could sort of be like reading your parents' playbook? Yeah. How would you like something like that? That might be very motivating for a lot of kids.
Yeah, so they would be interested in and learn a little bit from it. Sure. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
I like that. Jim, I got to tell you, I thank you so much for writing this book, for coming on the show. I think that this is so valuable. And as someone who has worked with teens for over 40 years, I think that, we probably would have had a lot less work to do with some of these families if this book would have been out 40 years ago. Now, what else? Do you have something else coming up? And if anybody is listening and goes, well, wait, I want to get a hold of him, or I've got more questions, what's the best way for them to get in touch with you?
Yeah, I would throw out a couple things. First of all, and I think I mentioned earlier that one of the most common questions I get from parents is, how do I get my teenager to open up and talk more? And I have a free resource that I offer right on the homepage of my website. It's 10 questions you should never ask your teenager. Think of these as like conversation killers, right? Yeah. But then I also have 10 great questions, you know, the conversation starters. And it's a free resource. You can go to the website and download that. And the website is familyenrichmentacademy.com. So again, familyenrichmentacademy.com, and they can get that resource and they can learn about my coaching programs and the book's available on Amazon. Again, the book title is How to Be the Parent Your Teenager Needs You to Be. Mm-hmm. It's available there on Amazon, but I also have a link on the website on the coaching page also. That's the best way to get to me.
Yeah, and for those of you, if you're driving and you couldn't write all of that down and don't try, you can go to our site at answers.network and we'll make sure we have that there. Again, it's familyenrichmentacademy.com, but we'll have it all on our site as well. Jim, thank you so much. Is there something coming up next? Do you have a follow-up to this?
Well, you know, from a book, there will be more books to come. I'm not sure. I've got a lot of work to do in this current area, I feel like. I love the writing process, so there will be more, or it may just be more like a second edition of this one. As you know, as time goes on, you discover new strategies and you have new stories. Like you talk about success stories, yeah. You know, I can see where in a year or two, I may have, you know, 10 new success stories that are just awesome that I could, you know, include into the book. So yeah, there's always more to come. And I produce content on a regular basis, much like you as well. Again, just to, you know, my whole goal, as I mentioned, is to try to serve and support parents as they move along that journey as a parent. Mm-hmm. And I encourage them to think of themselves as like the hero within the family. And it's, you know, they step into it and lean into the idea of being love-based and being the hero within their family.
Well, thank you. You've not only been able to be the hero, but, you know, helping other people do it makes it even greater. Let's talk at some point in time off the air, because I would see you as being an incredible speaker for some of the organizations, the National Association of Therapeutic Schools and Programs, Educational Consultants Association, things like that. I think that getting your book to them, which then gets it then out to more educators, I think would be incredible. So
absolutely. I'd love to do it.
Let's talk about that. So again, thank you so much. And again, for everybody out there, either go to Jim's website or go to answers.network and we'll have all of his information. All right. And for everybody out there, be with us next week when we're going to replay one of our most popular shows of 2020. And it was with author Amy Newmark. And she discussed, at that time, it was her new book. It was part of the Chicken Soup of the Soul. And it was Your 10 Keys to Happiness. A great book, a great read, but listen to her talk about it. I think that you'll really enjoy it. And also please visit our archives of past interviews at answers.network, or you can just subscribe to our show through Apple Podcasts, iHeartRadio, Spotify, SoundCloud, YouTube, Rumble, Spreaker, and so many other popular podcast platforms. And if you like what you hear, please leave a review. Tell us how we're doing, and know that it's going to help us reach more people, and that's our goal. Also, the next time you're on Facebook, Instagram, or Twitter, please remember, stop by the page, check out some of our latest posts, and if you like them, please like us and spread the word. So for everybody out there, be good human beings, and be with us again next week on Answers Network.
You're listening to Answers Network with Alan Cardoza, only on LA Talk Radio.